We were created to create. We were made to make things. We were created to multiply. And to me, the way that we do that, the way that the most successful people in all of human history have done that, is through investing. If you've ever seen an investment chart of a really good company, the chart kind of goes like this, and then it goes like this, and it starts to go up and to the right, and then eventually it hockey sticks. And the hockey stick part of that, the graph that you see over and over again, is because that's the power of compounding. If we're standing still, if we're not moving forward, then inevitably we're dying slowly but surely. You can live a fine life, as I said earlier, on the saver's approach, but can you live the life that you're capable of? I think that the future is going to continue to be shaped the same way it's always been shaped. It's going to be shaped by the people who invested, who sowed not sparingly, who took risk, educated risk, measured risk, and they did it because they actually wanted to grow something bigger than anybody thought it was possible to be grown before. And the only way you can do that is to actually approach your life as an investor. All right, today we're going to talk about an approach that I really believe can bring you to the right side of the bell curve. We've talked a lot in previous conversations, Jake and I, about moving right on that bell curve. And for a long time, I've thought, well, there's an approach to life. There's an approach to all the different areas of life that I think ultimately can do just that. And today I want to go into what that looks like, what that approach is. And I call it the investor's approach. And the investor's approach is just what it sounds like. It's approaching life, whether it's your faith, your family, your work, your money, your time. It's approaching it like an investor would. And I want to dig into and dive into what that means. And then I want to juxtapose it. I want to contrast it with these other approaches that I think are more prominent in life. The approaches that most people are taking that I think are keeping most people stuck where they are, or keeping them from progressing to where they ultimately have the potential to be. And so, Jake, today, that's what we're going to talk about. And yeah, let's get rolling.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right, where we have talked a lot about what it means to be on the right side of the bell curve. You know, I'd love to talk more about how to, you know, actually get there and take some actionable steps to get to that point. So I guess just if you can start, like, just, you know, you talked a little bit about the investor's approach, but, you know, I'd like to go over all four of those, what all four of those actually look like, because sometimes I feel like I get caught in one of them or two of them at different points in time. So,
yeah, so let's do it this way. I'll just lay out the four different approaches that I see that people take. And then we'll spend most of our time talking about, well, what is the investor's approach and what makes it better? And so the first one is the consumer approach. And in the last couple of our conversations, we've talked a lot about people's, when they get stuck, when they feel like they're struggling. Oftentimes it's because we're stuck in this consumer mentality. We're stuck approaching life or whatever area of life as a consumer. And so to me, what that looks like is really about just gorging ourselves, so to speak. It's like, hey, I got to have it now. I need that quick hit. The mental picture that I have in my brain oftentimes is like a drug addict or a junkie, somebody that just constantly needs that next hit, that next thrill, so to speak. And that's honestly how a lot of our culture conditions us to approach life, whether it's our jobs, whether it's our families and our relationships, whatever it might be, our health. It's like, give me that quick pill, give me that shortcut. And so I think that is, if people are feeling stuck, in my experience, you know, that's one of the main culprits, is they just might be stuck in this consumer's mindset, this consumer's approach. So that's that one. The next one is the saver's approach. And this one, on the surface, it sounds good. It sounds like it would be beneficial and helpful, because we're taught in school, we're taught in a lot of the different places that are teaching us about saving. But to me, the irony in it all is the world, the way that it operates, is entropy is a law. It's a law of physics, right? And so if we're standing still, if we're not moving forward, then inevitably we're dying slowly but surely. And so the saver's approach to me is like the guy mentally who builds a huge wall around his castle. And he thinks, okay, I'm just not going to let anybody in, instead of advancing territory. And so the savers, the people who are stuck in the saver's approach, they're protectors. They're people who are like, I don't want to take a risk. I can't really move forward because I've got to protect what I have. And the problem with that is, there's a place for it, and we'll get into that a little later. There's a place for all of these, but like, when your mentality towards life is that of a saver, that of a protector, that of a risk avoider, it's really hard to move right on the bell curve. It's really hard to end up living the life that you desire. And so that's like the saver's approach. And then you have the speculator's approach. And the speculator's approach are people who, it's like a consumer, but different, because they have big dreams, they have big ambitions, they have big goals, they have big ideas. But they're always looking for the shortcut. And to me, I think of the speculator in terms of a picture as the gambler, right? They're the person that's going, I'm going to go all in on black, or I'm going to play the roulette wheel. They're not so much focused on planting a seed and watering the ground and knowing that there's going to be time and being able to be patient and even bored and not excited all the time. And so the speculator oftentimes will be successful in some way, shape, or form, but they live this yo-yo life because it's highs and it's lows and it's highs and it's lows. And so they almost oftentimes in their personalities even are really excitable, and then they're really depressed, and then they're really excitable and really depressed. And it's because the speculator's mindset, at least the way that I think about it in what we're talking about, is that of the gambler. It's that of the high and the low. And so then you have the investor's approach. And the reason that for me this became a thing, I thought of this whole concept about 15 years ago, and I've used it like in my personal life, in my family, but I've not spent much time talking about it publicly, because it's taken a long time to sort of piece all these things together. But the point of that is, for me, the investor's approach came out of learning from reading all the books about Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger and Peter Lynch and Benjamin Graham and all these value investors as I was really young. I was younger than you are. I was probably 21, 22, 23. And I immersed myself in this idea of long-term value investing. And the more I got into the rabbit hole and the deeper I got, the more I realized that, like, oh, all the areas of my life where I had been inherently doing that without knowing that's what it was, where I had really been investing, where I'd really been sowing seeds, making sacrifice, watering the ground, and being patient, those were the areas of my life that I had the most success. And I was like, oh, this approach, the approach that I learned from these guys, as it relates to investing, it relates to everything in life. And so when I look around and I look at the world, I go, so many of the problems that we're facing, you know, think about like the reemergence of communism, is because these people, many of them are being indoctrinated in a lie that is consumers' approach in nature, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like, we're going to consume before realizing the value of creation. And the investor is the polar opposite. The investor is somebody, and the approach of an investor, who understands that they're going to make a sacrifice today in order to be able to consume more ultimately, or enjoy more in the future. And so that's kind of a quick overview of the four approaches as I see them. And I'm sure you'll have some questions, but yeah.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I think for me, I see myself as been in a different point in one of these at one point in time or another. And honestly, I feel like part of the reason why that is you hear these heroic stories of people that, of the saver, or of the you know, any one of the different archetypes that we're talking about, you hear like somebody hitting it big, the speculator hitting it big on a cryptocurrency or some volatile stock, and then you hear this hero story and it gets you interested in that. And then you hear like the saver, you know, they retired at 60 or whatever with their nice 401k their savings account. And what do you feel like is different from the investor's approach in that sense of, you know, almost like the other approaches are feeling stuck? What makes the investor's approach kind of free?
Yeah, so I think that, and I mentioned this earlier, but it's probably a good time to dive into it. It's not that there's never a time to be a consumer. Like, we all have to consume something to survive, right? It's not that there's never a great time to be a saver, because in many cases, you should save something before you start, you know, trying to go out and be a full-time investor or really dive into investing. And there's also a time for speculating, right? Like, any good financial advisor or any good financial planner would tell you that, hey, depending on your age, like, there should be some small chunk of your investable portfolio that you're actually utilizing for speculative plays. And so it's not like it's one or none. For me, it's the underlying or overarching theme of our life, right? If the theme of our life is that of a speculator. We're going to experience life where, yeah, man, you might hit a big one, but you'll probably lose many more big ones. And so you won't get like the steady up and to the right that you do if you're a good investor. Because if in the investing world, they say, if you go make $1 million and then you lose 50% of it, to get back to the million, you got to then double your money. You got to make 100% to get back to where you were. That's very hard to do. And that's why people who are constantly trading all the time have such a difficult experience as an investor long-term, because at the end of the day, the big losses can only be made up for by even bigger wins than the original big wins. And so it's a very difficult way to live life. And you can see that kind of lifestyle in many people, right? Even as we talk about it. Now, the saver, I think for me, the saver's approach, where it's so dangerous. And again, I think the investor's approach is rooted in a biblical narrative. Like if you think about God in the Bible, he talks all the time about multiplication. He talks about compounding. He talks about bearing fruit. He says some will bear 30, 60, and 100. And so to me, the danger of the saver's approach is, I think it sells us short of what's possible in life, because oftentimes the saver is really focused on themselves. They're focused on like, how do I control my circumstances? And the investor is in my mind, as I think about it, is not primarily focused on how do they protect themselves. They're primarily focused on how do I multiply so I can do more good for not just myself, but primarily for other people. It might be financially for my family, or it might be because I want to expand and multiply capital to support my family, but also some nonprofits or some other good work in the world. And so to me, listen, you could live a saver's life. I know a couple of people who, you know, they retired early and they've saved a lot of money. But I can tell you that they're not enjoying retirement the way that they could have, because they're literally like huddled around and they're trying to protect with a wall the nest egg that they have. And I think that, I don't think it has to be that way, man. Like I think that there's this ability to go out and to just constantly be looking at life through the lens of an investor, always experiencing this growth, right? And it's gradual growth. It's not like the speculator where it's just a big win. It's more like if you've ever seen an investment chart of a really good company, the chart kind of goes like this, and then it goes like this, and it starts to go up and to the right, and then eventually it hockey sticks. And the hockey stick part of the graph that you see over and over again is because that's the power of compounding. And that's why I gravitate towards the investor's approach, because it's like it happens slowly, 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 and suddenly. And I think what we're seeing in culture today, you know, and we've even talked about this in some of our past conversations, is like the narrative that's being sold to younger people is that you should just have to skip. You should be able to skip all the slow growth and get right to the hockey stick. And it just doesn't work like that. And if it does work like that, it's because somebody speculated. And people who constantly speculate end up living a yo-yo life, and then they become disenfranchised, they become frustrated, they become pissed. And so for me, it's just like, hey, I think the better way is to make slow, steady gains. And then eventually, if you do it long enough, and if you're smart about it, you'll get this hockey stick that you desired in the first place. The difference is it will be sustainable. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's how I think about it.
No, it does. I think, you know, that leads into kind of my next question that I had for you is for me, and I'm sure for a lot of people, I've been under the assumption that there's a sort of barrier of entry to going into this investor's mindset and the idea that I need like a pile of money to start investing, or you need I'll have the power to invest once I've saved enough, let's say. So like, how would you combat that idea?
Yeah, it's like the old adage that people say it takes money to make money, and it's just simply not true. It's true in certain contexts, but in the general scheme of being like a principle, it's not true. Because when I think of the investor's approach, the first place you should invest, which we've talked about before, is in yourself. It doesn't really take any real money to take your capacity to earn a living, let's say, and double it by just investing in yourself. Like, you don't have to go invest in the S&P 500. You don't have to go invest in a business. You don't have to go invest in cryptocurrency or any of these things, because where you should be investing first is in yourself. Because if you can double your ability to provide value in the marketplace, you can at least double your ability to make a living. And so that's a monetary example. But let's take like a health example. You know, people can take Ozempic or whatever the heck it's called. They can take these pills that will help them lose weight. Or back in the day, it was they could do gastric bypass surgery. But the reality is what that's doing is it's fixing a symptom, not the cause. The cause is a mental state. The cause is an addiction. The cause is a depression. The cause is there's something underlying that's causing people to overeat or overdrink or do whatever. And so if you just take the speculator's approach, which is what I think taking those kinds of things are, it's this, hey, I need a quick fix. I need a quick home run. And yeah, it might work for a minute. But if you look at the data, most people who got gastric bypass surgery ended up overweight again and obese again. Why? Because it didn't fix the actual problem. The actual problem doesn't get fixed by speculating. It doesn't get fixed by saving. It doesn't get fixed by consuming more. That's why you got there in the first place most of the time. It gets fixed by taking the approach of an investor and saying, well, I got to start small. I got to start with one small thing I can do today. And then tomorrow, I'm going to compound on top of that one small thing into another thing. And then another thing and another thing and another thing. And it's not going to take 6 weeks. It's going to take 2 years, but I'm going to fix the underlying problems over that 2 year period. I'm going to prove to myself that I can be consistent. And not only is my weight going to change, but everything in my life is going to change, because instead of looking for a shortcut, instead of looking for the next fix, I look to actually fix the problem. And the way that we do that is by sowing seeds and watering the seeds and tilling the soil and doing all the hard work that society wants to tell us isn't necessary in order to reap the reward. And so for me, I think your question really was a question about the financial side of it. And so back to that, I don't think it takes money to make money. I think it starts with invest in yourself. What skill sets do you have, right? Like when I decided to buy into my first business at 24 or 25 years old, that was an investment decision I had to make. And you and I have had conversations outside of our conversations we've recorded here, where it's like, well, how do I know when to make the leap? How do I know when to do the thing? How do I know which thing to do? And it's like, well, part of being an investor, some of the greatest investors of all time are the greatest learners, right? That's one of the things that I love about the investor's approach is the investor's approaches life like you're a forever student. And so what you do is you hold to a few things very tightly. Like you hold to your investment principles very tightly, but you hold to the information that you're consuming, that you're gathering, that you're underwriting, that you're observing very loosely, because things change all the time. And if you're holding on to an idea too tightly, that's where you lose a bunch of money in the investment world. But if you hold on to ideas loosely and your core criteria tightly, then you can pivot when pivots are necessary. And so for you guys, I think it's, what are the skills that you want to develop in order to develop yourself so that, like for me, it was understanding investment principles. I spent so much time developing those skills, understanding the philosophies, understanding the things to look for, the things to look out for, that when it came time to be presented with an opportunity to invest, I had the confidence that the investment decision I was going to make was the right one. Did I have the guarantee or the certainty? Definitely not. Especially in the time, it was the great, like the world was falling apart in the Great Recession, but I had the confidence, and the confidence, there is no shortcut for developing the confidence. The confidence is developed through the hard work over time, the dedication, the discipline. And that's to me, what, at least a huge part of what makes the investor's approach work. So I don't know if that answers your question, but.
No, it does. It's interesting that you say that. You brought up the story of you buying your investing in your business when you were 25. That's, you know, I'm that age now. So my question to you would be like, in terms of math, because that's probably the best way to visualize this investor's approach is, you know, thinking of it in calculus terms, or like you're looking at a graph, right? You know, my question to you would be is you took that leap when you were 25. I'm 24 right now. Let's say I stayed on the saver path for the rest of my life instead of taking that leap on the investor path. How much like wealth do you think I'm giving up over time versus staying on the saver path and going on the investor path?
The vast majority of it, probably, if I had to guess, probably 1,000%. You know, I think when you really think about You can live a fine life, as I said earlier, on the saver's approach, but can you live the life that you're capable of? Can you live the life that's available to you? No. The world isn't changing because Elon Musk is a saver mentality. The world is changing because he's an investor mentality. He's an entrepreneurial mentality. And those mentalities are about growth. They're about lifetime growth. For the most part, the saver is still trying to grow some, right? Like most of them aren't just letting their money sit in their bank account and earn nothing, but you know, they might have 70% of their money in bonds earning 3 to 5% a year. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's certainly not what it could be. And like I said, I think to me, the way that I think about this, I'm not trying to say every single person that a saver is this way. I'm just saying from the archetype standpoint, the analogy standpoint, the saver is so focused on not losing that they can't focus on what could be gained. And what I want to do is I want to help awaken in people the idea that the pie can continually get larger. And we just get to make individual decisions as to, well, how much do we want to pursue that pie being able to get bigger? And so, you know, it can easily gravitate towards it all being about money, but it's not. It's the same thing. Like, let's talk about marriage. If you have a saver's approach to your marriage, you're probably not still dating your wife. You're probably not still pursuing your wife. You're probably not still doing the things that would make your relationship and your marriage fruitful and enjoyable and exciting and all those things. You just end up getting into the rut of consistent normality. And is there anything wrong with that inherently? Probably not. But is it all that it was created to be? Is it all that's possible? Is it all that it could be? Absolutely not. Why? Because you stopped investing. You stopped sowing seeds. You stopped planting and watering, and you stopped tending and caring for, and you stopped growing. And so for me, what I'm trying to say is, like, the investor's approach is the approach. It is the way that you take what you have and you just continually make it better and better and better over time. It doesn't mean you don't have setbacks. Like, if you look at any, even the greatest investors of all time, like Warren Buffett, well, he still has years where the stock chart goes down. But if you zoom out over the, you know, 60 years, 70, 65 years he's been doing it, man, it just goes, like I said, it goes like this, up and to the right. Well, that's what I think our marriages can look like. And that's what I think our parenting can look like. And that's what I think our health can look like. And that's what I think our faith can look like. That's what I think our money can look like. That's what I think our work can look like if we take the investor's approach.
Yeah, that's really good. I think for anybody listening, you know, if we were to look at the graph of what you mentioned, the hockey stick, everybody's seen these graphs before in their life. Like, you've seen those exponential hockey stick graphs. And then you've seen the savers is linear, they call it linear math. So it's a straight line. And then the speculator, you'll have, if anybody's ever seen like a stock graph, you know, that's pretty much exactly, it goes up and then it jumps in it, and it's like, usually it's exponential and then down, exponential down. And then for me, being in the position I am, my question to you is if I were to tomorrow wake up and decide I want to be on the investor's approach, what is like one thought process, one change in my mindset that I can have to like just take action on something
tomorrow? Sure. So I think that maybe a question that you could ask when you're thinking about whatever it is that you're considering is my desire here to consume? Like, am I deciding yes or no because I want to consume something right now, or is it because I want to protect something right now? So if it's yes, I want to consume, that's probably rooted in the consumer's approach. If it's I need to protect, it's probably rooted in the saver's approach. And then is it a gamble, right? Is it a gamble would be like the speculator's approach. And then as far as the investor is, am I sowing into something, right? And so one way to think about this, at least in my mind, is, well, what does it mean to be an investor? And so one of the things that I think about, if you think about investing from the financial standpoint, and I touched on this a few minutes ago, but it's like investors gather information. So they're scouring the world for information about the things that they're interested in investing in. And they're constantly learning. They're bringing in information. They're sifting. They're sorting. They're organizing. They're taking what feels chaotic and they're turning it into order because they're sense making. They're trying to make sense of all this stuff, all this information out there. And so what does it take to get to a point where you say yes or no to an investment decision that's different than the way the speculator does it? Because the speculator is also saying yes or no to a gamble. But see, a gamble is different than an educated decision. A gamble is like, hey, I don't know. There's no real rhyme or reason. It's just a gut feeling, or it's an instinct, or it's a momentum thing, or it's a trend thing. The investor they're not consumed or interested in those. What they're consumed in is it's an underlying thing. Like, is the underlying financials of this business, let's say, point me in the direction of my thesis, right? Does it prove my thesis true or false? They've taken the information and they've put it into something that they can then use as a decision-making framework. Now, here's the thing. Again, there's never a guarantee, but it's an educated decision with conviction versus a gut feeling and reaction, right? So to me, it's like the consumer is, hey, I need a fix now. The saver is, I got to protect something because I'm afraid. It's often rooted in fear. The speculator is, I got to gamble because I'm probably going to miss out. Speculators are really bad about FOMO, right? So if you feel that there's some sense of FOMO, you're probably speculating. And then if instead you're like, I've prepared, I understand, I see the pros, I see the cons, I see the ups, or I see the opportunity, I see the risk, I've taken all that into consideration and I'm making an educated decision, then you're probably operating in the investor's approach. That's why for me at 25 years old, I had spent enough time learning about the investment principles, learning about all these things, that when I got presented with an opportunity to buy into this business, I was like, oh, I've already done all the work in the past 4 or 5 years, 3 or 4 or 5 years. So that when the opportunity was presented to me, I didn't have to then go and do all the work to figure out whether to say yes or no. It's like I had already done that work. And so the saying of the yes and the no was much easier than if I was speculating and I was just like, God, I'm going to miss out on this opportunity. I got to make a decision. Investors almost never feel rushed.
Yeah. You know, I just wanted to touch quickly on something you mentioned earlier. You were originally, you said throughout this conversation a lot, you know, I've listened to Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, these really influential investor people that we all have heard the names of. But you know, the other thing that you mentioned is this is a totally biblical idea. You know, the mm-hmm. idea of the farmer and you know, the other thing is that you mentioned fear in a lot of those other categories. It's so funny because I looked this up the other day. It says over 100 times in the Bible, some variation of do not be afraid or do not fear over 100 times. It's like the most common thing in the Bible is written. And, you know, I guess for you, what sort of biblical ideas, you kind of touched on a little bit, but I'd like to expand on a little bit more of like that's really the fruit of why this works so well, is because there's biblical ties to it working out for thousands of years. What sort of idea do you have there?
Well, I think, you know, I like to start with the big picture and then zoom in. And so for me, when I think of the big picture of the Bible, or at least part of the big picture, is that God is interested in multiplication and he gives us resources in order to do fruitful things with them. And so for me, the consumer is, that's not a biblical worldview is in terms, I'm not saying you can never consume, but what I'm saying is if your life is fixated on consumption, if you can only find happiness and fulfillment and enjoyment through consuming, then I think that is not a biblical approach to life, because it's a resource, destroyer. That's why communism doesn't work, because communism doesn't focus on the production side. They focus on the consumption side. Everybody deserves to consume some amount, but there's no requirement. There's no built-in ability to judge. Well, how productive were they? Are they producing out of their? Are they consuming out of their production, or are they consuming out of someone else's production? Because when you take away the production, you inherently have no consumption or ability to consume, and so consumption, that mindset is not biblical in my mind. The saver's mindset is also not biblical. You think of the guy who buried the talents in the ground. And what did God say to him? The master said, "You wicked servant." He called him wicked. Why? Because he buried the resource. He saved, he hoarded, he was afraid. What did he say? He said, "I knew that you reaped where you did not sow, and I was afraid." Right? Mm-hmm. And so we know from examples like that, that the saver's mentality, this mentality that like, I'm just going to protect what I've got, what God's given me, because I'm afraid to risk it. I'm afraid to sow it. I'm afraid to grow it. That's not biblical. And then the speculator's mindset, I also don't think is biblical, because it's not good stewardship. The Bible is all about stewardship. And so if we're gambling with the things that God has given us, I don't think that's the biblical way to do it. I think the biblical way is to invest. And I think that there are pictures in the Bible that show what investing looks like. And that's why I think the Bible always talks about, like in the Bible always talks about a garden and fruit trees and seeds and a harvest. Okay. And communists, as an example, they talk about the pie. Well, the Bible doesn't talk about God's design for things being a bakery. He talks about God's design for things being a garden, being fruit. And fruit, the thing that's different about fruit than a bakery is a bakery, yeah, pie can't get any bigger unless you make it bigger, but then you can only get so big. Fruit in a garden, on the other hand, can just keep expanding and expanding and expanding and expanding. And so for me, this is where like my worldview is probably a little bit different than a lot of other Christian people, because I think the big picture of what I see is that we were created to create. We were made to make things. We were created to multiply. And to me, the way that we do that, the way that the most successful people in all of human history have done that is through investing, through sowing seeds, caring for the seeds, being patient with the seeds, even being bored with the seeds, but knowing that in the end, those seeds are going to grow into something that none of us, when we plant them, can know how many seeds will come out of the one seed, right? That takes risk. That takes hard work. That takes sacrifice. That takes overcoming our fear. That takes taking a risk. And I think that that's what investors and the approach of an investor in the world brings to the rest of the world.
Yeah, I think, one of the things that I want to think about for me being a 24-year-old is, I want to get to the point when I'm 60 years old and I don't want to look back and go, what did I do with my time? And what did I do with my resources? And, you know, we've talked a lot about resource allocation. There's this verse that I wanted to mention, and it's in 2 Corinthians 9:6, and it says, "This is the point," and maybe this is the point, is whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. And I think that is totally powerful for this moment right now in terms of, you know, our obligation to think like an investor, you know, and not a consumer or speculator or anything. So,
yeah, that's good. Warren Buffett says the definition of investing, or the investor, I should say, is primarily focused with the underlying production of an asset, whereas a speculator is primarily focused with the price of an asset. See, the investor is inherently interested in the multiplication, the production, the how something is going to be stewarded in order to create more of the something. And then Warren Buffett says, the definition of investing is foregoing consumption today in order that we would have the ability to consume more in the future. And so that's why it's the antithesis of the consumer, because the consumer is so fixated on being able to consume what they want today that they inherently sacrifice their ability to consume in the future or to consume more in the future. And so the verse that you just read, I think what Paul is saying in that verse is he's talking about giving, if I recall correctly. And what he's saying is if you sow by giving sparingly, then you're going to reap in life sparingly. But he's not just talking about giving. He's talking about a principle. It's a biblical principle. And so when you asked me earlier, like the difference between a saver and an investor, that is exactly it. A saver, because they're afraid of losing what they have, inherently sows sparingly. And an investor understands. That's why I said at the very beginning of this conversation, an investor is primarily focused not on themselves, but on what the growth can do for other people. Right? An entrepreneur, a great entrepreneur, yeah, they get rewarded financially, but the reason that the great entrepreneurs are doing it is to help humanity. And so what does that require? That requires risk. That requires, when you sow non-sparingly, when you sow generously, when you sow big, right, you're taking massive risk. And that's why these governmental systems and the conversations that we're having around government today, all of them miss that point. All of them want to consume based on the risk other people took, without actually understanding and acknowledging that the only reason we have the ability to consume it is because those people risked it. And so I think that the future is going to continue to be shaped the same way it's always been shaped. It's going to be shaped by the people who invested, who sowed not sparingly, who took risk, educated risk, measured risk, And they did it because they actually wanted to grow something bigger than anybody thought it was possible to be grown before. And the only way you can do that is to actually approach your life as an investor.
That's good. Yeah, I think we can leave it at that. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, hey, if you're still here, thanks for being here. I hope you like this idea of the investor's approach. If you did, love to hear it about in the comments. I would love if you'd smash that like button. And if you have anybody that you know in your life who could maybe benefit from this conversation, would you share it with them? Because what Jake and I realized is over the last several weeks, you know, this is really what it came down to. We've talked about moving right. We've talked about the right side of the bell curve, but like, how do we actually do that? And I truly believe, based on my life's experience, that the way that we do that is we start to approach life like an investor. And so a lot of our talks moving forward, a lot of the underlying current about behind or beneath why we talk about the what we do and the way we do is going to be really rooted in this idea of the investor's approach and how it's better than consumption, speculation, saving. And so that's kind of where I think a lot of what we talk about will go from here. So if you think that you would like to follow along on that journey, or you know some people who would, we'd love it if you would share this with them. And we appreciate being here, and we'll see you next time.